Crash goes Warner. Bang go India. And does Bolt go Wallop? Genuine fireworks on cricket. Only better.
What an innings, what a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
Brian Charles Lara becomes the first man in the history of the game to register a score of 400.
Six sixes in an over. Yuvraj Singh finishes things off in style.
England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Betfair Betting Podcast presents Cricket Only Better.
Welcome back to Cricket Only Better, the show which wishes for an extra S so it could say things like puts the odds in podcast. I'm Ed Hawkins, betting.betfair cricket correspondent, and I'm here to try to tell you what will happen, not what I think will happen.
And I'm Sam Collins, still without a title, still bemused and disillusioned with whoever writes these scripts, and still here trying to keep Ed in the present in case he disappears somewhere rather unpleasant when talking about data, implied probability, and Lord knows what else.
What's wrong with co-host as a title? I mean, I don't understand why you don't find that acceptable.
I don't know what to say. You've put me on the spot there. Is that a formal offer?
We're overflowing with goodness again this week in the cricket-only better world.
Oh, tell me all about it, Ed.
Well, we've got 2020 vision. We will peer ahead to England v New Zealand, be joined by CricViz analyst Freddie Wild to talk India-Bangladesh, which is the meat in the sandwich this week.
And there is also Mythbuster, a real corker this week. And with a heavy heart, I can confirm the rumours that Crickonomics chart is back this week with Ed, a little bit late on Halloween, dressed exactly like Tony Blackburn in his pomp.
I'm hoping that it's going to be really loathsome and irritating for you. I've really worked hard on it this week.
Yeah, I can also confirm I loathe that section. So this is, you know, shaping up to be a wonderful, wonderful pod. So before we get into it, there's one thing I need to ask you about. We cannot ignore one of the big news this week has been the ban handed out to Shakib Al Hassan for failing to report to the ICC approaches by match fixers. What do you make of this?
I think it's a significant move from the ICC, because I think probably in the first time in its inception, they've really gone after a big name player who's got a big reputation. And that's important, largely because the style of the charges is for a failure to report an approach. Now, I suspect in the past, under previous anti-corruption regimes, that player would have got a slap on the wrist, told not to do it again, and it had all been hushed up and kept quiet. But they've blown Shakib out of the water with this one, and they've sent a significant message out there to other players that they're not going to tolerate the failure to report an approach, which is seen as a bit of a soft crime, if you will. But I'd also say what is important is that some of the reaction to Shakib and some of the abuse that he's taken, I think we always need to remember that the player in this situation is often a victim, and there are scores of reasons why a player may get involved in this kind of dark arts, and a lot of them often stem from mental health issues. And I can say that because I've sat down opposite people like Lou Vincent, Mohammad Ashraful. And what cricket shouldn't do is sort of cling to this comfort rug, if you like, that a player has done it because he's greedy or he needs money. A player often gets involved in corruption in this way because they have some personal issues, some mental health issues. And greed is second, third, fourth on the list, maybe. So he's been pilloried, but just try to think that players like this can be victims too. And that is something, by the way, which the ICC Anti-Corruption Unit believe. They've compared them to victims of child abuse. And if you want to read about that, you can have a look at the Cricketer issue. I think it's from September, where I did an interview with the ACU chief all about that particular strand. This is all very grave and serious. Can I start doing some bad puns?
Go for it. I mean, I'm sure there are at least three or four in there, but I just didn't think it was the appropriate moment to pull you up on it. So what are we on to now? We're on to England, New Zealand versus England, the third T20. It will actually be played while this pod is in production, a very slick ongoing production that happens behind the scenes to get this ready for your ears. What can we glean looking ahead to the day-nighter in Napier on Friday? England look pretty inconsistent at the moment. Odds at this one, for this one, expected to be pretty similar. So the Kiwis around 1.8, England 2.2. I suppose the major talking point is that Trent Bolt looks likely to be back. Well, how does that affect things?
Well, Bolt will be a big draw for punters. He many will think he's going to make the difference between a win and a loss. Bolt doesn't have a great reputation with analysts. And if you look at New Zealand's record with him, they win 44% of the time. But without him, it's 64.7% of the time. So look, by all means, if you want to back New Zealand, back New Zealand. But don't do it because Trent Bolt is back. Don't hang your wager on that fact.
Even with Trent Bolt taking on an England top order who, again, the other day, 3 for 2, you don't fancy him just to run through them pretty quickly.
Look, it could happen, but he's not this big game player. He's not their big match winner. And he has that reputation. So it's, the win percentages
okay.
don't,
I hear you.
Don't stack that up.
You're looking at me saying, don't make me repeat myself. No, I'm not going to make you repeat yourself.
I'm happy. Because I've got another stat for you. Because with Bolt, they concede 8.65 runs per over. And without him, 7.69.
Who's the difference maker then? Who's the guy who plays instead and does the business? Who's the guy we should be on?
Who's the guy we should be on for top bowler?
Well, yeah, I mean, if Trent Bolt is the misnomer here, then who's the replacement? Who's the guy who's going under the radar?
Well, Ish Sodhi's probably going under the radar, but I'm really going to confound you now by suggesting that actually you might want to back Trent Bolt for top New Zealand wicket taker. Because the two aren't related. New Zealand can lose the match and Bolt can still take wickets and go for 12 and over.
Okay.
And if you can get the right price on Bolt, he's got a wicket every 13.8 balls in the last 3 years, which is the best strike rate of any Kiwi going. And I think he'd have won money over the last 2 years, and that's only 11 games, so not a huge study sample. He'd have won money about 36% of the time. So if you can get around about 10 to 3, he might be a bet. But problem is, I don't think you're going to be able to get 10 to 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, Edward Hawkins, hedging bets. Since time began. Okay, what other angles have you got for us?
We've been able to get 5 to 6 for New Zealand most sixes in the first two matches. If it holds, great. And we may consider going even shorter than that. They are averaging at least one more per game than England over the last 2 years.
I mean, that is just a mind-bogglingly boring statistic. I can't believe...
Six appeal.
At least one more six a game. Wow. Wow. Those are the margins though,
yeah.
Right?
More than one per game is a very, very sexy edge for punters. A lot of people will be listening to this and they'll be energised by that.
Okay. So. Also, you know, I'm just using my razor-sharp journalistic brain here to say that that stat is obviously including a team, talking about an England team, which included Jason Roy, Ben Stokes and various others missing today. Or at the present moment. So, you know, that's probably going to bump up a little, right?
You're so right to point that out. I'm so pleased you did. Because England have replaced those types of players with batters who actually don't hit it as high, as wide, as handsome as that. David Malan as opener is probably not as dangerous as Roy, for example. But Malan averages 0.76s per game compared to Roy's 1.02. And I can see you're very energised by that stat. And I might send you over the edge with Sam Billings averages 0.62 sixes per game compared to Ben Stokes's 0.8.
I'm going to resist the urge to hum the Ghostbusters theme tune, but it does feel like there should be some formal introduction to, I suppose, what Ed would describe as his signature. No, because actually that is his signature is the terrible chart countdown, but his favourite child in the show is Mythbuster, which is back in again. And I'm not gonna lie, the suggestions have not been flooding in. We have had time to do other things, not rather than fending off replies. But there have been a couple. And James Pacheco, getting in touch via Twitter at Cricket Betting, wants Darcy Short's record for top run scorer in the Big Bash.
I think in time with that one, Jamie, because we're on T20 international duty. But when the Bash rolls around in December, late December, I think, we will see how short Darcy comes up.
Quick Rahul has been back to ask for Wazim Akram, which we like a lot, but I think we've got to give someone else a go this week. So Andre Pampoloni, a West Indies fanatic, has taken issue with us calling the Don Bradman the greatest of all time and says simply two words, Brian Charles.
Brian Charles Lara is this week's Mythbuster and also features in our intro music. So it would be remiss not to find out how well he does in the first innings of a test match over his career. But there's been a bit of consternation again what was his average price for top West Indies run scorer in the first innings of a test? And we've got actual quotage from Betfair Sportsbook this week. Do you want to do it in your same voice as you did last week?
I will do my computer text generator, just so you can be very clear that this comes from neither the mouth of Ed Hawkins or Sam Collins. For those of a certain generation, there is a good debate whether Lara or Tendulkar was the better batsman.
Is this voice Irish?
No, it's just straight. God, Ed, you're interrupting my flow. If you take it on their best five innings, I'm going to start this again. For those of a certain generation, there is a good debate whether Lara or Tendulkar was the better batsman. If you take it on their best five innings each, I would say that Lara's innings are better. The 153v Australia-Bridgetown 99 and the 375v England in Antigua are two fantastic examples. Seems to be three, but that's me commenting. As for what his average price in the first innings of a test match would be, I think you have to look at the players he was playing alongside. His debut in 1990 was with such WI legends as Richie Richardson, Gordon Greenidge and Carl Hooper. By the time of his 375v England in 94, he was batting with Jimmy Adams, Shiv Chandrapal and Phil Simmons. Chandrapal, I know. He was clearly head and shoulders above his fellow West Indies and continued to be for another 10 years, even with the introduction of a certain Christopher Henry Gale and Sarwan. I think if you were pricing the market for any of their tests in that 10-year period, it would be very hard to make him any bigger than 6-4.
I think Sarwan should have been Sarwan.
I just apologise to anyone who may be offended by that.
6-4, the average price then. That's the same price as Bradman. So that's the sort of echelon we're dealing with Brian Charles. I think 6-4 average price is a little bit short.
I don't know what to say in response to that. I don't know. You're looking at me like I'm a brick wall.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bounce it back at you.
Okay. Well, I bounced it back to Twitter, so, and I think there's a...
Okay. So, well, we have got a response at Edmund Bayliss. Very, it only took 3 minutes to come back to you. Great. Well done, Edmund. He says, ran my model for his most common playing partners, and he would be at 4.2 to top score. The 11 being Gale, Campbell, Lara, Hooper, Chandrapal, Adams, Sarwan, Ganga, Bishop, Ambrose, Walsh. Expect it would be far shorter than that because he played with lots of weaker players.
If there are three sequential words guaranteed to get my juices going, I think ran my model is right up there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I like this. How many people out there have models? Well, no, I'm just intrigued at this subculture of cricket betting models out there.
Look, we might get Edmund on to tell us about his model.
I would like that. I would like that because you think you've got a model. I want to test Edmund's model against your model. I want to see if, in fact, we should be subbing out. Next week, it should be, hello, I'm Edmund Bayliss, and welcome to the cricket... I'm Betfair's cricket correspondent.
If I can be replaced, you can be replaced with a automated voice, clearly.
I'm 100% fine with that.
So, Brian Charles, what do you reckon his record was, Sam? Do you think he's going to be up or down?
I'm an optimist. I believe in the beauty of his batting, and so I'm going to say up.
Yeah, you say that every week. 38 wins, one tie in 129 innings. Three ducks in a row, interestingly, in first innings against England, Australia, August, November, December 2000. Finished his first innings test career with a duck in Karachi 2006. I always think that's a mark of a truly great player to go out with a duck.
Sure.
If you'd been backing him at odds of 6-4, level stakes £10 every time, you'd have won £577.50. But you'd have lost £900.
Wow.
So you'd have been down £322.
Wow. What can we glean from that, that actually he was a big match player who performed very well in second innings?
I think we can probably glean that 6-4 was a bit short. So because I'm such a big fan of Brian Charles and I didn't want to upset our new friend Andre, I've given him an average price of 2-1 because I think that's a bit fairer. Hey, Betfair Sportsbook are probably going nuts at me right now. But you're still losing £130.
Wow. Wow. So now we've got our... I mean, could you just do anything for a chart?
Absolutely.
Anything for a chart.
Love a chart.
I'm just looking at the script here. and I've got the word the Mythbuster charts. So what does that... Tell us what that is.
Well, I just thought it would be worth just reminding people who we've myth-busted so far.
This is like the cricket... only better equivalent of the star in a reasonably priced car leaderboard, basically.
So at the bottom of the Mythbuster charts, which I'm really pleased about, is the greatest of all time, Don Bradman, costing you £155.75. Next, Brian Charles, losing you £130. At number two, Shane Warne, losing you £117.50 on the top bowler market for Australia in first innings. And at number one, cheering a billion Indians, who are all going to download this podcast now, Tendulkar, plus £1.80 over his test career.
So in the highly sexualized world of cricket data, the Bangladesh victory in India appears pretty extraordinary. We need to make sense of this one. We've got the next one on Thursday in Rajkot.
Yeah, because India went off 1-8 on for that first T20. And they were well beaten. Bangladesh won by 7 wickets. India had managed to post only 148. Bangladesh went off around 6-1. So big value if you saw that coming. So to try and make sense of it, we've got Freddie Wild, CricViz analyst.
Thank God for Freddie Wild.
Are you saying he's better than me?
Well, I'm just saying it's nice to have someone to talk some sense.
Freddie is on the line now. Freddie, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, how do we make sense of this India versus Bangladesh T20 series? Massive shock with Bangladesh winning the first T20. They were 6-1. We've got players missing all over the place. How do you view this one?
Yeah, well, it was a big shock, Bangladesh winning for the first time against India in a T20 international, and yeah, not many people would have seen that coming. But as you said, India rested a number of players. Bangladesh are obviously short of two of their best players as well. But yeah, it's a difficult one to read into. I mean, at this stage as well, you know, year out from the World Cup, lots of teams are experimenting, I suppose. Obviously, we're seeing England playing a second string side in New Zealand, and India are doing a similar thing with a number of their major players rested. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to read. But that said, you'd still have thought India would have beaten Bangladesh, and it was a surprise to see them lose. I guess in T20, obviously, is the most unpredictable format and the format in which the underdog has the best chance. But India's strength and depth in T20 is remarkable. So, you know, that first result was definitely a surprise.
Yeah, it's interesting you say their strength in depth is remarkable, and I would agree with you. But when a team loses the likes of Kohli, and they've taken him out of their own accord, they don't have Jasprit Bumrah. They've also left out Kuldeep Yadav, who's had a terrific record over the last 2 years, taking wickets in this format. Can we assume that basically reduces the historic or perceived gulf between a superpower like India and a Bangladesh who are, let's face it, are not a superpower?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I pulled out a couple of key names there who are missing from India's side. I mean, I think that even then, though, I do think that their depth is such that you'd expect them to come out on top. I mean, they're such a well-resourced side, not only in terms of players, but financially as well. India, as I said already, India should win against Bangladesh when they do play them. But yeah, it doesn't narrow the gap, and it brings Bangladesh into it. And on what was a sluggish pitch, they managed to probably get the best of the conditions, in the sense that India weren't sure what a good total was.
Any indication what the pitch might be like in Rajkot? Something similar?
Well, it would probably be a better batting track than we see. Delhi historically has been a very difficult pitch to read. I know that Ricky Ponting, who's coach of the Delhi Capitals in the IPL, is very frustrated with the fact that he never knows what kind of pitch he's going to get when he turns up on any given day. But yeah, Rajkot historically in the last few years has been a pretty good track for batting. The run rate since 2010 is 8.5 runs and over, which suggests there'll be runs on offer. And then the last match is in Nagpur. And there we can expect more of a sluggish affair, again, a little bit like in Delhi. You'd expect that a lower scoring game would suit Bangladesh slightly more. India have obviously got the power to post big totals and chase down big totals. Bangladesh, particularly without Tamim and Shakib, are less power orientated, and so they'd prefer a game on a on a lower, slower wicket. So maybe Nagpur is their best chance of sealing a what would be a remarkable series win rather than the game in Rajkot.
We've got no Virat Kohli, so that would suggest Rohit Sharma is expected to dominate. He didn't top score in that first T20, having gone into the game top scoring 26% of the time. Who do you like for Indian batsmen to follow on the top batsman market?
Well, I mean, either of Dhawan or Rahul are probably also worth a go. I mean, Rahul has flattered the sea at international level, really. Cricketers, we've got him down, probably is one of India's very, very best T20 players. His IPL record is phenomenal. In 2018, he had an incredible tournament, but he's always sort of struggled to take it to the next level on the international stage, at least. He looks very good. He's shaping up a little bit like India's James Vince in recent times. He's probably achieved a little bit more international level than Vince has done. But
that's just offensive, Freddie.
he looks so good, but he's not yet managed to nail that spot down, and he's competing for a spot in the team with Dhawan, really. When Kohli returns, there's only going to be space for one of them. But obviously they're both openers, which means they're going to face a fair degree of, Rahul's batted three and Dhawan's open, but they're going to bat in the top order and they'll face a fair degree of balls. So I can't really look beyond those three as top batsmen. I mean, Pant is a phenomenal player, but he comes in later. Shreyas Iyer as well, a good talent, but again, coming in at number four is a bit more of a risk going for top batsmen with them. Rohit's the standout player, but Rohit's been a little bit inconsistent at international level in T20s. In fact, in T20s generally.
He's an ODI player, really. I mean, obviously, he's forging ahead in the test game as well now, but in ODI cricket, he is Mr. Reliable for a top run scorer,
He has struggled, and it's a bit weird. I think in the IPL, he's been messed around. Well, not he's been messed around. It's his own team with Mumbai. But he sometimes opens, sometimes bats four. He's not really had a particularly stable position.
Rohit's going off 9-5 favourite and has 9 wins in 34. Next best, Dhawan, 11-4 and 6 wins in 29. And Rahul, 4 wins in 18 and 7-2. So Rahul probably the value there. Can we talk top India bowler? Because Kuldeep Yadav has dominated this market and leaves a big hole behind and probably lets in Yuz Chahal, who's been really consistent as well. And Sam, I think you've got some listener interaction.
Yeah. Adnam Sunny says on Twitter, what's Yuz Chahal's top bowler win rate? Bangladesh never play leg spin well.
So his win rate is 20.8% over the last 2 years and he's going off at 3-1. That's not value in terms of percentage to odds. But Freddie, have you got anything on him?
Yeah, well, I mean, Chahal is, as you said, he's been consistent for a long while, and Kuldeep's absence probably does elevate him to sort of he's the most experienced member of the attack, and certainly he, as a leg spinner, he's always going to be in the game. And that listener's right, Bangladesh do generally struggle against leg spin. Chahal is certainly in the frame in around that discussion. Another name that might be worth thinking about is Deepak Chahar. He bowls primarily in the power play, but he's been a very effective wicket taker in that phase, and he's taken more wickets in the power play since the start of last year than anyone else in world cricket. He bowls an attacking line and length early on and looks to swing the ball, which is always going to bring you into play from a wicket's perspective. And obviously Bangladesh have got, they had a debutant opening the batting yesterday. There's no Tamim. So they're potentially a little bit flimsy at the top of the order.
Deepak Chahar, 7-2. All these prices, Betfair Sportsbook. Let's move on to Bangladesh batters and bowlers. Again, tricky to sort of decipher what's going on here because Shakib and Tamim are not available. Who's the standout guy? Mushfiqur has top scored in that first T20 with a terrific innings, taking them home and taking them home comfortably. Any insight here?
Well, yeah, I mean, Mushfiqur is probably the best bet in that regard, in the sense that he's the most sort of reliable, consistent player in that top order with the absence of Tamim and Shakib. Someone like Soumya Sarkar, who has a pretty terrible T20 record, is in the top three and is obviously a player of considerable class. But he would probably, I'd say that's a bit more of a long shot. As you said, it is difficult to work out exactly who stands out in this Bangladesh team. Mamadullah is another option, but he comes in a bit late and his role is pretty volatile, coming in and sort of trying to hit out. So, you know, if they were to lose early wickets, then Mushy's probably going to be facing a fair number of balls. But that isn't always a guarantee, in which case you might find him coming in late and unable to score.
Yeah, Mush Fekir, 5 wins from the last 22. He's going off 16-5. Mahmoudullah, 2 wins from 22, 5-1, going in at number 5. So he pays your money, he takes your choice. You mentioned Sarkar, 7-2, all Betfair sportsbook prices. Litton Dath has 3 wins from 20, but he's 3-1 favourite on the market. Moving on to top bowler, Mustafizur Rahman. Has the fizz gone flat?
Well, yeah. After his incredible start to his career a couple of years ago, when he was phenomenal and revolutionary in a way, bowling a sort of a style that no one's really bowled before, no one's bowled in the modern game, sort of this 75 mile an hour plus spin, essentially, cutting it across the right hander. He was so effective early on, and he's had a few injury troubles since then, which has sort of slowed his progress. I don't think he's ever going to be quite as effective as he was when he first broke onto the scene. We see this quite often in T20 cricket, guys who come on and immediately do, particularly among slower ball bowlers, guys who come onto the scene and are really good, and then sort of batsmen find them out to an extent, and they struggle to be so consistent. One who comes to mind is AJ Tai, who had a brilliant 2018, and he's actually sadly out for injury now, but he's sort of fizzled out as well. I don't think the fizz that's going to happen to quite an extent. I think he's still going to be effective, and he still is effective. That left arm angle is always going to keep him in the game, and the fact that he does something unusual with it, with that cutting action. But he probably isn't ever going to be as effective as he was at the start of his career, which is a shame, because for a period he was looking like he could be, almost a legend for Bangladesh. But that maybe is a little bit more doubt now. But I still think he's a really effective bowler.
The Fizz, 23.8% win rate, strike rate of 15.2 over the last 2 years. Unfortunately, Betfair Sportsbook rate him 5-2, and we've got him more like 10-3. But moving ahead to Australia v Pakistan, third and final T20 at Perth Stadium. Freddie, I know we've had a washout in the first game at the SCG, and Pakistan did okay. Rain breaks didn't help, and they've struggled with lower order power, but they're always going to struggle with lower order power. Do you see any hope for them in this series?
I do, in a way. I mean, I definitely think they're going to push Australia harder than Sri Lanka did, who were woeful. I think, Pakistan are the number one ranked side. I think most people probably accept they're not the best side in the world, certainly anymore anyway, and that in the last year or so, they've sort of fallen away. But I like Pakistan, especially because they've got a strong bowling attack with Irfan, Amir, Shadab, Imad and Wahab. There are 5 pretty good bowlers there. Obviously, Irfan's coming back into the team now he's playing international cricket for the first time in a couple of years. But I think they've got the makings there of a strong attack. And when you've got a strong attack, you're always going to be in the game. Perth will probably suit them, actually. The Perth pitch in the last year or so has had a bit of life. Well, it always does. Originally, it was in the Wacker, but now it's in the new Perth Stadium. But it's got a bit of life and spice to it. I could see, potentially if Pakistan can get a couple of early wickets, which they might do with that attack, and particularly on that pitch, then they're in the game. I mean, Australia's batting, one of the things that it is a little bit shallow with Agar at 7 and Turner and McDermott at the moment at 5 and 6 with no Maxwell. Sri Lanka were unable to expose that depth, and Australia hardly lost a wicket all series. Pakistan needs to get David Warner out somehow as well. But if they can get early wickets, then as I said, I do think Australia have a little bit of a vulnerability in their batting depth.
Yeah, Australia massive favourites, 2-9 on Betfair Sportsbook, 3-1. You'll get bigger on the exchanges. And harking back to last week when we were talking to Paul Krishnamurti about in-play advice, it might be worth considering getting with Pakistan if in those first 6 overs somebody like Warner or Finch goes off quickly, not to overreact to that power play section. I'm going to give you a chance to look back on David Warner's insane run in T20s. I'm going to bastardise your own tweet of last week, Freddie, by shout numbers at you. 57, 60, 100, 81, 37, 57, 67, 50, 51, 70, 15, 10, 100, 69, 95, 19, 63, 61. That's David Warner's run in T20s. He's a freak, you said.
He is. I mean, it shouldn't really be possible to score as fast as he has done, and that's sort of central to it, really. and be as consistent as he's done. As you said there, every single score is double figures. Countless times he passes 30, he passes 50 occasionally, and he's got a couple of hundreds. To be that consistent in T20 cricket is so rare. I mean, we saw it very briefly in the IPL with Russell, who was scoring even faster, but not for as long.
Good luck, guys. I'm off to go and get... I'm going to put my fingers in my ears for a few minutes here, because it's that moment that Ed Hawkins has been waiting a week for. It's the Cricketonomic Top 5.
Based on the most reliable T20 international top batsman winners for the series currently taking place around the world. Are you ready? At number 5, it's... Da 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 da. Dhawan 23.3, striking a blow at number 4 for the unsexy Collins. It's Munro, the Kiwi, 24%. Number 3, Sharma El Sheikh, the top bat market. Rohit, 26.4. And at number 2, if he's not beating up bowling attacks, he's attacking fellow pros in bars. The brutal David Warner with 37.5. And at number 1, been around the world and I can find my Baba Azam, 55%.
Is it over? Yeah.
That's time up for another episode of Cricket Only Better. Join us next week where we'll be looking at Test cricket. India playing Bangladesh.
What? What's that?
No idea.
Sounds boring. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Again, fourth time in a row. Usual calls to arms. Leave us a review somewhere obscure. Send us the link. Maybe we'll read some of them out. Spread the word. Send us some tweets, hopefully nice ones, to Ed if you've got any suggestions for Mythbuster, anything like that. Oh, that's fireworks night, you can tell. And, you know, please bet responsibly. Only gamble with money that you have, or if you're 18 years older. Ed, what else is there we need to say?
Just my Twitter handle, @cricketbetting, if you want to abuse me. I'd be very happy to do a mean tweet section.
Done.
It's going to be you, isn't it?
Well, you know, who knows? I don't know how many satellite accounts I can create in the intervening week. Thanks very much, guys, and speak to you soon.